You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I'm your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a chance to enjoy family and friends on yesterday, if that's what you decided to do. You know, hope everything was cool. You know, I haven't heard anything about the numbers of of foolishness and ignorance that happens in our community surrounding these particular days. But then again, it started yesterday. So we got today and tomorrow and Sunday. It's crazy. Anyway, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. No more tune in. But no, if you want to listen to tune in, to listen to radio programs that say, for instance, you've moved, you know, and you remember those programs back where you came from, you can still listen to those programs. I still listen to WNOV in Milwaukee and a couple other stations, you know, or Carl Nelson in Baltimore. So that's what, but then again, like I said, they have commercial interruptions, and especially on Time for an Awakening, so that's, you know, not cool. So to listen to Time for an Awakening without commercial interruptions, go to timeforanawakening.com. The right side of the page, you'll see the link, hit on that. And if it is 11 a.m. on a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, you get this program. Get this program live. Otherwise, go to the top of the page at Podcast Programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. And for those, I know we're going to update that. Me and Brother Quaker are going to update that real soon. Probably do it this weekend. So hopefully come Monday, it'll be updated. Okay? All right. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Once again, this program is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Thursday, yesterday, from 8 to 10, the Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Mississippi on the Move, 8 to 10 on Thursdays. This evening at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Tomorrow, Saturday, from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council with Dr. Janine. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Okay. I'm not going to do announcements. I'm just going to read a number of things. Many things I haven't read in a while, you know. And we're going to talk today about why I identify with Africa. I identify as African. And I want us to understand why. And it's not that you can't identify with being black, you know. And I know many people, you know, make that interchangeable. But we'll talk about that in a minute. But let me go to some of the pieces I've read in the past as it relates to us. This piece here is Brother Ezra Erohon of the Sovereign Psyche. It's a nice piece here. This is on point. There is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. That's so sad. That is so pathetic. And it just proves how whitewashed, how we are so infected with the Urugu virus. We are so infected that here we know that we have access to a continent where all the world's resources more plentiful there than any place else on this planet. And yet, we choose not to deal with it. We abandon it. We'd rather deal with these crackers. We'd rather deal with being an American and taking and getting the crumbs off their table. There is no other historical instant. You can't find this in all the annals of history where a people were captive and enslaved. And because of what had happened to them so deeply that when the opportunity to go home, the opportunity to have wealth, they rather stay with the captor. They rather stay with Urugu. They're so infected. They're so afflicted by the Urugu virus that they don't understand what they have in their hands and at their disposal. There is no other historical instance of a formerly captive people who valued integration. And not even integration. Integration means that I have what I have, you have what you have. We integrate it to make something better, whatever. This is forced assimilation. Assimilation. With their former captors to the point where they completely abandon the superior wealth of their own homeland. Gotta find the other peace family. It's around here. I get it. Mm-hmm. Okay, I found that one. Oh, okay. Bear with me, family. I appreciate it. I'm trying to. Here we go, family. Here we go. Okay. This is Lord Macaulay's address to the British Parliament on the 2nd of February. In 1835, February 2nd, 1835, he says, I have traveled across the length and the breadth of Africa. I have not seen one person who is a beggar, who is a thief. Such wealth I have seen in this country, such high moral values, people of such caliber, that I did not think we could ever conquer this country unless we break the very backbone of this nation, which is her spiritual and cultural heritage. And therefore, I propose that we replace her old and ancient education system and her culture
For if the Africans think that all that is foreign and English is good and greater than their own, they will lose their self-esteem, their native culture, and they will become what we want them to be, a truly dominated nation. This is just so sinister and so evil. These people are evil. They talk about all the other Europeans who went out to take people's stuff. Of course, they put it in romantic terms. They feel it's justified. The age of exploration, the age. See, that's why for me, the right language is important. To me, the right language is important. Because these are some evil-ass people. This is what Kwame Nkrumah said. He said, I believe strongly and sincerely. He said this at the Speech of Freedom in 1961. You remember in 1957 he was hailed because it was the first country on the continent to finally break away from colonizers, and the decolonization of Africa began to take shape after that period to some degree. And I think that, there was some decolonization, but it was also some neocolonialism, big time. I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, African culture united under one federal government will emerge, not just as another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear or envy and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, and friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind. Osagyefo, Kwame Nkrumah. Yeah, some years later, he said, if we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling amongst ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered heretofore. I hate that he was right. I hate that that man was right, but he was so right. He was so on point. Man. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effect that Europeans have had on our ability to think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts so that to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europeans, this is demanded by an African-centered view. Because why? Because we are Africans. And because the fact is that to embrace Europe leads us to genocide. We are Africans. Mama Marimba Ani. Yeah. Haven't played this in a while too, family. Go ahead and play this, you. Haven't heard this in a while. And then I'm going to get off into why it's important that, at least for me, that I believe that we identify ourselves as Africans. As Africans. Yeah. We are Africans. Okay.
There is a lot of talk of late on the African continent about the fact that Africans are awaking. There is a lot of talk about the fact that we are woke. But the question that I'd like to ask you is, almost 100 years ago, a man called Marcus Garvey rose and told Africans that they must unite. Unite in their control of resources. Unite as nations. Unite their imaginations, their dreams, aspirations, and capabilities to grow an Africa and a race that will be able to self-determine and compete against other races. A man called Kwame Nkrumah came and said the same message. And another by the name of Malcolm X said the same. But the question is, after almost a century since the rise of Marcus Garvey, has Africa achieved unity? Do we control our resources? Do we unite in our aspirations, dreams? And have we elevated Africa into a continent and a race that can compete and self-determine against other races? The truth of the matter is we have failed. We have failed because we have remained divided. We've continued to work as 54 different states that continue to be subjugated. This is why the French continue to have 14 colonies on the African continent. It is why 36 African countries have got American bases and AFRICOM on their soil. It is why many African countries continue to sell their resources, their institutions, for debt to countries like China. And the question that I'm now challenging you, the woke generation, with is, what are we going to do about it? The reason we've got wars on the African continent is because we're being divided for conquest. The reason we've got sanctions on the African continent is that all the independent knowledge and education, the power to take control of our resources, can be destroyed so that Africa can continue to be colonized by our Western colonizers. This is why now we need to rise. Remember that you, the African American, with all your paper money, the greatest wealth among all black nations, only have paper money, but the true wealth is in Africa. The true wealth is the reason why Africa is under sanctions and war, the one that Europeans want to keep for themselves. You need to bring your paper money, your skill, your knowledge, your frustration back to Africa to invest it in the control of real wealth and real resources in the form of the oil, the diamonds, chrome, lithium, cassiterite, and all the other resources that the Western worlds are fighting to control in Africa. Your paper money can be leveraged into machines, skills, technology, and the knowledge that Africa needs in order to move and prosper. You, the Caribbean, with your skill, power, determination. You, the Jamaican, the first people to resist European colonialism. You, the Haitian, the very first black peoples to defeat a European army. You are the answer to Africa's problems. You, the European African, with all that you've learned and earned, the basketball player, the soccer player, the sportsman, the singer, the musician, the actor, with all your billions of dollars, are the investment that Africa needs to stop its dependency on the colonizer. It's about time that we rose. And I'm saying that Marcus Garvey's dream can be fulfilled, because when he dreamt it, not a single country, not a single African country was independent. When he dreamt it, not many black billionaires existed, if any. But today we've got black billionaires. Today the richest man in Africa is a black man. We have what it takes and the capacity that it takes to grow our continent into being a continent that can be respected, can self-determine, control its resources, control the processing of those resources, and create currencies based on those resources to be the leading economy in the world. With that, we can industrialize, grow up the technology curve, and begin to create the machinery, the tools to defend the sovereignty of this continent. And now I say it's time that we unite. We have countries like Zimbabwe under U.S. war sanctions to make it unattractive for any African to come because Europeans are preserving it for themselves. But I'm inviting you, my African-American brother, you Africans in the diaspora, you Africans on the continent to say, come and take advantage of the greatest reserves of lithium, chrome, gold, true wealth, land, an opportunity to develop infrastructure for us to create wealth as a people, for yourselves, for the advancement of Africa. The time to awake is now, but awakening takes action, pride, investment, development, innovation to give our people power. This is the time.
The time is now. It's been time. The time is now, family. And it's, you know, it's the toughest thing to do, but it seems like it should be the easiest thing to do. It's about the mind, but it's very difficult to change that mind, isn't it, family? Especially when you're bombarded 24/7, 365, that these Caucasians have imposed upon us. 24/7, 365. Yeah. So, I've talked about this before, family, on the program. I'm going to, is it important? And it says, yes, it is important to say I identify as black. Well, of course, I've had this discussion. I remember talking with my good brother, Baba Renoka Rashidi, you know, who also believes that it's interchangeable, African, black, you know. But I agree with Dr. John Henry Clark, you know. There is no, just like there is no Negro land, there is no black land. I know the names of Kemet mean the black land, but so does Ethiopia, and there's others. But the bottom line is it is Africa. And imagine if Africans embraced Africa, no matter where we are Africans, and then come together on that point. You know? So, let us indulge. Can we call ourselves African or truly speak of African people? And let me say this in terms of what I'm doing. I'm constantly, as you know, I interchange. When I see black, I'll say African. When I see in slave, I'll say captive. You see, I think that it is important that we develop the right verbiage or the right words for the situation. You know, there's no doubt about it. The word slave, which we are not slaves. We were captives. But yet, the European loves them son of a bitches, those cracker ass crackers, love to call ourselves, to call us slaves. The slaves. And it sickens me when I hear us saying the same damn thing. The slaves. They had a bunch of slaves. We are not slaves. We're human beings. We're Africans. We were captured. We were killed captive. Just like imprisoned. We're not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We have never submitted. We always resisted. We fought. We fought on the continent. We fought in what is called the Middle Passage. And we fought in this hemisphere and everywhere else. Why have so many people with melanated skin chosen this color as an element of identity? When do we start to call ourselves or define ourselves? Well, of course, in the Black Power movement of the 60s, we definitely didn't say we were black in the 50s or before then. No, we didn't identify or call ourselves black. That was very demeaning. I'm colored. I'm a Negro. What is the relevance of this identity orientation today and its place for the future? This article will answer that question. Well, I hope, you know. Yeah. And what it shows here on this particular piece is the various cultures and traditions of African people regardless. So it is about being African, not about being black. The Baganda of Uganda, the Yoruba of Nigeria and Benin, all of the African Colombians, the African American, American Africans, and once again, Africa is the noun. A noun denotes a person, place, or thing. There's a word in front of the noun that describes it. It's an adjective. And for us, we are American Africans. American Africans. If I was in Colombia, I would be a Colombian African. If I was in Brazil, I'd be a Brazilian African. If I was in Ghana, I'd be a Ghanaian African. Tanzanian African. Cameroonian African, Tanzanian African, South African, no, Azinian African. Africa is the noun. We see here culture traits that are found in all of Africans. The joy of living and the spiritual connected to music vibrations. It is the African environment and ma'at. That is to say, the philosophy of all Africans, which have engendered these cultural traits. That's right. Ma'at. Just like the Nguza Saba. The Nguza Saba. Those seven principles and the seven principles of Ma'at. The Nile Valley. Contrary to what many people believe, the so-called African identity does not begin with the way others look at us during our captivity and colonizations. Africans themselves already identified themselves as African at the time of the pharaohs. Our ancestors from the Nile Valley used the root word kam, which means charcoal, cooked, burnt, black, which is equivalent to Kemenu, Kela, which means the same thing in many current African languages. The ancient Kemetic people had elevated their skin color to the rank of the most central element of their identity. They called their country Kemet, the black country, or Kemenu, the country of those who are black. They called themselves Kemet. Kemi or Kemet, that is to say, blacks. Why? Most certainly we have explained because of this secularization of the sun in African spirituality, the sun being the messenger of God, the sun giving black skin to the Kemetic people, then their color was the mark of the divine on them. Their color was the mark of the divine. And this skin color was regarded as highly positive and sacred, hence representation of God and the divinities in black. Amun, Amun-Ra, the African presence here in its masculine form in the temple of Hatshepsut. During his lifetime, he made Ramesses II, the Ramesses that everybody talks about. During his lifetime, he made a vibrant prayer of Amani, asking her to protect the black. This way of thinking and conceiving of oneself essentially disappeared at the end of the Nile Valley civilization. From then on, one was only black in the eyes of others. In late antiquity, the Greek word Ethiopian, meaning burnt face, was to be used by Europeans to designate all blacks. Then came the Roman word manure, meaning black. The Arabs, in their part, used the word Sudan, which also means black. Imperial Africa and the European captives trade. During the imperial era, chiefdoms, kingdoms, and empires were formed all over the continent. At the time, Africans only identified themselves in relative to their ethnic nation and their religions when it came to Islam or Christianity. And of course, we had African vitalism for the other African religions. For its part, was based on ethnicity and identity. There was, therefore, no need to mention its practice in particular. We were Mandinka and Mandinka and Muslim, Congo or Congo and Christian, Umoa and Yoruba, but we were absolutely not black or even African. So there was a feeling of brotherhood between members of the same ethnic group or between Christians or between Muslims, but certainly not between blacks or Africans at the time. Given the mentality of the time, saying that the blacks sold their brothers makes absolute no sense. First of all, it must be remembered that about 15 kingdoms and empires that refused the trade were demolished by the Portuguese. If you refuse, you had no choice. They're going to kill you. For the remaining states that traded between human beings with Europeans, the vast majority of the people they sold were captives from other ethnic nations. They were therefore absolutely not selling their black brothers, but foreigners, they believe. A trade of one ethnic absolutely did not see a person of another ethnicity as his black brother, whom he was selling to, but as a stranger with whom he had almost nothing in common, which of course is the disconnect, because we did had we understood that, but not at the time. That was the disconnect, divide. It was by boat that Africans arrived in America to be subject to the horrors of captivity. Their names were violently replaced by the names of European captors. Children who were deported or born on site were born on site. Children who were deported or born on site were torn from their parents to be sold separately. And again, the children were born to parents who came from different regions of Africa. All this meant that Evidently, a very large proportion of the people enslaved in America no longer knew what ethnicity and what nation they came from. They just knew that they came from this continent that Europeans knew as Africa. Added to this were the abominable prejudice built around their skin color by justifying their enslavement and the treatment of tremendous violence that went with it. Thus, feeling a community and brotherhood based on African origin, their black skin, and their catastrophic treatment began to appear. And it is very precisely of these three pillars that modern identity or black identity was born. It was at the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century in America that Pan-Africanism was born, a school of thought that would begin the liberation of African world. It was a question in the face of extraordinary oppression of uniting all African people and those of African origins to achieve freedom and justice. For Africans on the continent, violent colonization also brought with it extraordinarily racist thinking developed to justify our captivity. The same treatment therefore brought with it a sense of brotherhood too. Faced with the adversary and of colonization and the thought of European Caucasian extremism, racism and privilege, white supremacy, which reduced them to the ranks of subhuman, Africans had to, as in America, define themselves as black and unite as such, embracing the objective of Pan-Africanism across. Now, we define ourselves as African. Pan-Africanism across the Atlantic. The Jamaican Marcus Garvey, the most emblematic figure of the Pan-African movement, will define more deeply the goals of the movement. An African people united under one God and who must build a powerful empire in Africa. Garvey advances has two new and critical points. Point number one, the need for a common religion or culture to create a sense of brotherhood among our people. Two, the building of a great state of Africa to protect the Africans here in America, in the Americas, as well as on the continent. If Garvey emphasized the need for common culture for African people, he who will never, unfortunately, set foot on the continent, Marcus Garvey never set foot on the continent of Africa, will not know how to build it because he never set foot on the African continent, they believe, this article believes. It is therefore to advance Pan-Africanist thought and fill its gaps that Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop intervened. Dr. Diop. Sheikh Anta Diop arrived in Europe in 1940 and evolved within the Pan-Africanist movement influenced by Marcus Garvey. More than the immediate end of the brutal colonization against which he was engaged, he had his sights set on a long-term objectives of Pan-Africanism. He therefore goes in search of his common root of that of Marcus Garvey was looking for identifying ancient Kemet as being African, as a summit of the African experience it was, as the origin of many African people, and realizing that African fundamentally shared the same culture as that of Kemet. Then for Diop, it's around the heritage of this civilization that the unity of Africa will be built. Following the two themes defined by Marcus Garvey, Diop and his followers knew as the African-centered movement, Afrocentricity movement, arrived at the following conclusions. The feeling of brotherhood between Africans will be built around the vitality and the cult of the one God, Imani, and his law, Ma'at, reflected in all cultural aspects of life. The single state will be the federal state bringing together
bringing together the states of all of Africa and whose institutional foundation will be Ma'at. Ashe. Jop, with on the right the Pan-African flag, revised by adding the Ankh across or across the Ankh of life, symbolizing life, which will continue as long as Ma'at is applied. The Ankh is the supreme symbol of thought and therefore of African identity. Ashe. Jop will then accept Kiswahili as the federal language of this future state, while keeping and integrating the cultural and linguistic specifics of each African people. Afrocentricity defined the basis of the identity in the community of all Africans and clearly advances the objectives of Pan-Africanism by proposing a concrete project. And today, should we still be defining ourselves as Black? No. Unless you live in isolation in the African community without media and little or no effective by the European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, white supremacy, that came from our captivity and colonization, you have or will experience racism, whether it is insulting, illusions, microaggressions, paternalism, discrimination, or even contempt or hatred clearly displayed in a Eurocentric feeling of superiority, it will happen to you. The most total human respect without ambiguity is only the fact of the minority. The rest of the world generally perceives us as the last of humans, or even the subhumans par excellence, while we are the civilizers of humanity. The fact of having been chased out of the history of civilization, our culture belittled or even demonized to the extreme, our physique seen as the opposite of beauty, the current underdevelopment of Africa with its internal and external causes. All this means is that we often look at ourselves and are looked at as inferior. So if you don't define yourselves as African and give that identity all its African-centered positivity, others will continue to define you as such and demean you, even mentally destroy you in their definition. You have to positively appropriate the African identity before it is used against you. From the moment you come in contact with the rest of the world, neutrality on the subject is simply impossible. You have to choose. You have to choose. And I choose to be African. As African people, we have a common origin, which is Africa. Our original and commonality and identity background, which is Ma'at. And we are attacked in the same way by European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. African identity is always relevant. So yes, you have to be African to be strong in today's world, which is very aggressive towards us. But above all, you have to pursue the objectives of Pan-Africanism and Afrocentricity to protect ourselves and to sustain ourselves and create a space of happiness for us. That's what we must do. That's what we must do. When I come back from the break, I'll read the piece on Afrocentricity. And also, too, understand the word, they spell it out and pronounce it Afro. Afro, an Afro is a hairstyle. We should use Afra, A-F-R-I, Afra. Just like it's spelled, when you spell Africa, okay? Not Afro. Afrocentricity, Afrocentrism, Afrocentric, Afrocentrist. With the growing visibility of a historical truth told by Africans, these words are very often used in debates, often with much confusion. However, they contain capital ideas, which we will try to explain in this article that I'm going to read to you when we come back. That's right. So, brothers and sisters, when we come back, we will pick up the conversation, read this, and then, of course, open the phone lines up on this Friday, on this so-called holiday weekend, the holiday weekend. So we're going to do that. And yeah, we can do it now. Let's do it now. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stick with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time For an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Parliament Funkadelic from the America Eats Its Young album. A joyful process. Parliament Funkadelic. I tell you, love it. Yeah. It's a Good Friday song. Good Friday song. Friday song is that funky one to get you moving, get you put out of here. So, yeah. Talking today about identity. How do we identify? Baba Baruti's book, Identity. Because we don't know how do we identify ourselves? How do we approach stuff? You know? So before I go to the phone lines and just hang on, I'm going to finish with this particular article. What is, remember, I'm saying don't use Afro. Try. I mean, we see it. You see it there just like all the other things. You can train your mind. You can train yourself in when you see something to look at another word or use another word or use another phrase or so forth and so on. You can do this, you know. So when I do see Afro, I see Afrocentricity, just like Africa. A, F. R-I, A-F-R-I, Afrocentricity, Afrocentric, Afrocentrist. Afrocentricity is a school of thought theorized by African academics in the U.S. The thought postulates that one must live by making Africa the center of everything. The term was coined by American African Malefe Ketiasante. In his book, Afrocentricity, translated from English to French, Professor Asante tells us this. Afrocentricity urges us as Africans, commands us to re-register, to rethink ourselves as subjects of our own existence. It demands nothing less than a voluntary and conscious reconstruction of ourselves on African basis. Not black, African. Concretely, Afrocentricity is an intellectual positive approach of returning to the true Africa. For Africans and American Africans, it is about living according to the authentic African identity and looking at the world according to it. It is about being reborn by embracing our ancestors, by continuing their experience while adapting to its today's world. It is therefore breaking with Western thought and Arab thought, which have been imposed on us by centuries of considerable violence. On a personal level, being African-centered means loving yourself physically and including your skin and hair. It means committing to using African names such as Oshiemi Adelabu, born Eddie Brown. That's me. It means returning to African spirituality and philosophy, Ma'at. It means speaking or learning to speak African language. It means designing Africa as the cradle of your identity. In terms of institutions, being Afrocentric means rejecting neocolonial thinking. It means rebuilding African societies and African states according to the political, economic, and cultural, and philosophical, legal, etc., systems that our ancestors put in place. That our ancestors put in place. In order to identify the theories that should be used to build Afrocentricity, one must have a precise knowledge of ancient African societies and therefore of African history. And it is precisely desire to live according to authentic Africa that led Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop. And remember, family, even though it's, you see the word is D-I-O-P and some pronounce it D-O-P, it was pronounced Jop, so I'll try my best to pronounce it the way they want it pronounced. Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop. Delve into the past. Dr. Diop is thus the precursor and figure of what has become the African-centered movement, Afrocentric movement. He and his followers, in addition to having succeeded in identifying the theoretical contours of Afrocentricity, have rediscovered three major themes of African history. Number one, Africa is the cradle of humanity. All the people of the planet are descended from an African woman and man. Africa is the cradle of civilization, with it, which it brought to its peak in ancient Kemet. The cradle of civilization was brought to its peak, its apex, its zenith, its pinnacle in Kemet. It is this strictly African Kemet or its heritage which is at the origins of civilization. And in Asia, Phoenicians and Mesopotamian, Persian and India, in the Americas, in Olmec and Mayan, and finally even in Europe. Every African center returns intellectually to authentic Africa. And to do so relies on precise knowledge of its history. It is therefore, above all the second aspects of Afrocentricity, that of history, that the Western intellectual has declared war. That's right, they have declared war on African centeredness, on Afrocentricity. Since the period of the captive trade, when the West decided to drive Africans out of humanity to justify their captivity, it is believed that it once and for all stifled our voice on the world's major issues. Modern Western civilization was born during the captive trade and the false theories that were put in place to build European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, white supremacy, and to justify white privilege are still the ones the West is based on. Basically, the mythological role of African people since our captivity is to be inferior so that Caucasian people, European people, and the West can feel superior. It is therefore unacceptable to the Western elite that we indefinitely contemptible beings who belong to it, dare to defy it and say with supporting evidence that we are the only civilizers of humanity. That's right. We are. The only civilizers of humanity, a historical role that it has stolen from us. To say that Europe was civilized by Africa is felt as a supreme insult, as if one were tearing out its heart. Now, what happened here? This is why, in particular, beyond presenting Kemet civilization as white, the West hides absolutely everything that Kemet has brought to the world, because it knows very well that it is a African civilization, a black civilization. Kemet. Only what cannot be hidden, such as architecture, is partially recognized. That's right. The architect, you can't, you know, it's there. Completely defeated by the scientific evidence presented by Africans, Western academia therefore decided, in order to save white supremacy and Western hegemony, to react with insult and invictiveness. Afrocentrism is a term coined, this term, and I'm going to use Afro, okay? Afrocentrism is coined by Mary Lefkowitz, a European-American sociologist. She is neither an Egyptologist nor a historian. She popularized the term Afrocentrism through the infamous book called Not Out of Africa. Excuse me. Not Out of Africa, how Afrocentrism became an excuse to teach myth as history. See, ours is myth. Theirs is fact because they created it and they say it and they say so. Mary Lefkowitz describes Afrocentrism as reverse racism of blacks toward whites in response to racism that Africans suffered from Europeans. She claims that Africa has no history and that Afrocentrism is the movement of blacks who, frustrated at never having had a history, invented one for themselves without proof and without research. The goal is to give themselves substance and hence their value in the eyes of whites who created everything, as well as in the eyes of other peoples of the world. For her, those who are in Afrocentrism and for whom she calls Afrocentrists, they lie when they say that humanity is of African origins, hence the Not Out of Africa. They lie when they say that ancient Kemetic people or ancient Egyptians were strictly black and African. They lie when they say that it was this black at Egypt that civilized the world, including Europe, and even its Greek ancestors who consistently affirmed to it would also be lying. Mary Lefkowitz insults Dr. Shekhanji Njap, calling him the founder of Afrocentrism. That is to say, the movement whose name she herself invented. While his work and words do not exist in any writing or speeches, Professor Njap, she attacks all African authors and researchers who have worked on the history of Africa in the wake of Dr. Shekhanji Njap. And the media, drummers of white supremacy, were quickly to relay these terms, Afrocentrism and Afrocentrics, in order to confuse the issue, which means that these words end up on the lips of many people who repeat them without knowing where they came from, who invented them, and why. Beaten by science, the West has therefore decided to create a diversion. It flees from the scientific discussion where it has already been and will always be beaten, and wants to attract Africans only into a contest of insults. The mentally colonized, brainwashed by European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, and temporarily insane Africans, also called Afrocentrists, those of their own who do the work on historical truth. For them, the perfectly clear evidence does not matter. There is no question of accepting it or even looking at it if their white masters do not give their brains permission to do so. And there's a lot of Negroes, family. A lot of Negroes, particularly in academia. Those who call African historians Afrocentrists say with all seriousness in the world that those are not blacks we see in the image. Why? Because it is impossible, since blacks are too inferior to have had any role in history. Some go so far as to say, to justify the remarkable Africanness of the Olmec sculptured heads in Mexico, that they were like that because the sculptor's tools were not sharp enough. Others go so far as to speak with all same shallow and mysterious civilization or extraterrestrials. There is no limit to the absurdity of the arguments developed and to continue the memorial genocide and save the world order created since captivity. In short, Afrocentricity is a positive approach to returning to ourselves as Africans. It is the construction of our future in the harmonious continuation of our ancestral heritage. Afrocentrism is an insult from the West in reaction to the historical truth that threatens its hegemony. This insult aims to divert the question of history and scientific facts. We end by saying, that our history fundamentally is not a debate with others. No, people will discuss the veracity of their history with another. Our history and our job is to conduct rigorous scientific research to find, affirm, inform Africans, and still identify Afrocentricity theories to build our future. This is the way we, in this way, we can only truly contribute to the progress of all humanity. We consider ourselves absolutely Afrocentric, African-centered, Afrocentric. So, there it is, family. There it is. Open up the phone lines. 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I definitely don't want to confuse anybody. And if one still wants to say they are black, hey, because you use black interchangeably with being African, I think for me, I'd say is that we use African instead of black. Once again, I say the words of Dr. John Henry Clark, Nana John Henry Clark. He says that there is no black, you know, although the translation of Kemet is land of the blacks or the people of the black land, so forth. But not to be confusing, there is no black land. And when you call a people, you must conjure up land, history, and culture. Land, history, and culture. So we are Africans. Now, of course, on the continent, there are 54 so-called countries on the continent that were all of it done by Europeans. In fact, my good brother, Brother Irv, has been to Senegal. And, of course, there's a sliver inside the country of Senegal that surrounds that sliver of Gambia. Because the French colonized Senegal and took that land in the dividing of that delicious cake that Leopold talked about. God, you know, some of these people, you hate with such disdain, such vigor, that when you say their name or hear their name, you just want to crunch your teeth and you just want to beat the, you know, Leopold. But the British wanted to keep the river. So therefore, the river, so when you look at, the map of Africa, and you see Senegal, and you see Gambia, and okay, where are we at here? So you see Gambia, and you see Senegal around it, and you see the river that goes right through Gambia with Senegal all around it.
They wanted to keep that river. Brother Irv, good afternoon.
Baba Oshi, thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Baba Oshi, when I first heard that, I listened to you for a long time. When I first heard you say that we were American Africans, that terminology fit my foot like a shoe that was made for me, because I'm so serious for that analogy. I instantly understood what you were saying. Mm-hmm. I accepted the fact that I was African, and I wanted to be African because I was like a child without a home. Everyone else has a homeland. Everyone else has a Spain. Everyone else has a France. Everyone else, the French, all these people. But we didn't have a homeland. We had a homeland that was given to us by Erugu. I'm a Negro from Negroland. I'm a black from Blackville. But where are my ancestors from? And I started to understand where my ancestors was from, that's when I understood how important terminology was. Mm-hmm. Because as a man saith, the man does it. As a man thinketh. So when you start to call yourself the N-word, then you start to think you act like the N-word. When you mm-hmm. start to call yourself black, then I'm everything black. But you understand that black is just what it says. It's a color. Mm. It's a color. I am African. And so what does Erugu do? Erugu makes African a bad word. He makes African all things negative. He makes mm-hmm. African on the bottom shelf. Mm-hmm. Anything African's on the bottom shelf. Anything Swiss chocolate is on the top shelf or eye level, so you can see it, you know. Mm-hmm. But where are the African, the things that Africans make, the things that Africans, do we import anything from Africa? It's just like when you see the American African walk into a store owned by a Jewish person or a store owned by a Korean person. Do you ever see a Jewish person or a Korean person walk into a store owned by an African? Do you see them buying from you at the rate, or even trying to buy at the rate that you buy from them? What is happening is we're hide. What the Erugu does is they hide their nationality. In other words, you'll go to a Target store or a Walmart, but you won't know who owns it, where the money goes, or anything like that. All you know is I got to get what I got to get so I can survive. Mm-hmm. And what you don't understand is the Most High, whatever you call the Most High, I call it the Most High. The Most High, the Spirit of God, gives you everything you need. Mm-hmm. When you became a doctor, somebody didn't make you a doctor. A doctor was in you. It was bought out of you. Mm-hmm. Like when I used to see young brothers in the fire department, I can't be no lieutenant. Well, how did he become a lieutenant? It was in him already. It mm-hmm. was bought out of him by listening and learning and accepting right. change. And see, we don't want to accept, I'm only speaking for myself. I don't speak for anyone but me. Don't want to accept. I'm one. Change is scary because I don't know the unknown, and that's why it's so important to have a show like this. Because the more you teach me about where I'm from, the more you teach me about who I am and why I am, the more comfortable I am with things that used to be the unknown, used to be the dark, you know, the right. dark continent. You know? Mm-hmm. Right. Why would you call it the dark continent? Mm-hmm.
Because it was dark to Europeans. It was dark to those they want to advertise it. It was dark in terms of the color of the people. It was dark in terms of jungle and all that bull. It was dark because of no information about it. It was dark, you know.
And then they made everything that is dark bad. So
evil.
Therefore,
yes.
The country just fell right into their analogy. It must be bad, and these people must be savages because they don't – we can't understand what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Did you ever stop to think maybe they don't understand what you're saying? But what everyone understands, which is a universal language, is pain. Mm. Pain is a universal language. Mm. You ain't got to understand nothing if somebody's chopping off your arm. And I'm really quickly, and I'm going to let someone else get on. I saw a short video of Patrice Lumumba and his last speech that he gave before they he was murdered. He was murdered by Belgium and France and the United States.
Yes.
When he gave the speech that said, we understand what you're doing to us. We understand. And Shell Motor, Shell Oil Company, all these people, we understand. They were celebrating King Leopold. That's what they were celebrating. They were saying that they were giving them independence. And Patrice Lumumba was an amazing individual. He was an amazing person who was far, far ahead of his time. And he was telling them, there's nothing to celebrate here. We're not celebrating this man who tortured and this colonialism that he perpetuated in Africa. And after that speech, those people murdered, a little while later he was prime minister, they murdered him and they chopped him up and all these real evil things they did, the same as they did to Nat Turner, because these are the same brethren.
They chopped him up and threw him in lie. Man, this is just evil.
Demonic. This is past bad. This is evil. This is something they did. Yeah, this is because when you're dealing with a psychopath,
mm-hmm.
when you're dealing with someone who can chop your arm off and chop your legs off of your children because they won't go out and get that rubber for you from a country that you just took over,
mm-hmm.
and you go to sleep at night and sleep good because in your mind you believe that the God that you serve is told you to come over here and do this. If that ain't crazy, then I don't know what is.
Yeah.
Told you to come over here and take these people's land and treat them any way you want, but yet God made all men, what, equal? Or some foolishness. So my point is, Baba Oshie, words are important. What you call yourself is important because that tells people what you think of yourself.
Right.
And if you get upset because I want to think myself as not on the same level as you, but even higher than you, this country is morally bankrupt. In other words, this country is their morality is eroded, and what I mean by their morality is that they care about themselves. These people don't even care about themselves. They will kill themselves to keep you from having something that is your birthright, which is just your name. Mm-hmm. I just want my name. My name is not Irvin Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
I am not Jewish. That's a Jewish name, Irvin. Irvin and
hey,
I. Irvin and I. Yeah, we went. Yeah, my had what on my knee, Irvin and I. No, I'm not Irvin. I am African, and I want my African name, and I will obtain that before I leave this earth. I will obtain my African name because that is who I am. My name is in me. I don't need Irugu to give me. To tell me who I am or where I'm from or mm-hmm. what Plymouth Rock did. I give a damn about all that. That's not me. That's you. That's you and your evilness. You know, your manifest destiny. When you read the books and you understand, you only have to go a little bit to understand that the appears to have read a lot because Irugu does not hide this from you.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't hide it. He doesn't put it in your school books, but he doesn't hide it from you because in actuality, Irugu is proud of what he's done to you. He's proud that he's been able to corral you and master you and have you do his bidding.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You don't see white folks coming and shooting black people other than police officers. You know. And the thing is, it's not the people. It's the system that they put in place, and that's where we get confused. Oh, I know there's some good white folks out there. Where they at? And like my brother Marcus says, and I'll never forget it, and I'm going to leave on this. He says, there are good white people. He said, in the cemetery. I said, brother Marcus, that's deep, brother.
Yeah.
That is a deep statement. And, and we can, one day we're going to talk about that statement, but that is deep.
Yeah.
To actually believe that Brother Umar even says it. Umar has his shortcomings, but that's neither here nor there.
Right.
He says all white people are racist. And I believe, and I don't have to tell you what he meant because he can tell you, but I believe that we are taught to have this racism. I played with everybody when I was young, but I wasn't like King, where I wanted to, I'm going to make sure we all get to play with white people. I played with them when I was young, but if you don't want to play with me when I'm older, then we don't play. You don't make me feel good because I sit beside you in a class. I didn't learn more because I sat beside white people. I sat beside some white people who were straight idiots. And that's all. Yeah. That's with the system. We have got to integrate it. We weren't trying to integrate the school. We were trying to integrate the money. You get what I'm saying? The black schools didn't have any books. The white schools had all the books. We even the books up. And y'all can stay over there. I don't have to integrate with you to make me whole. I got to be next to a white person. Or a white person who thinks he's better than me. Because what? Because he's white? I know I sound like I'm ranting on and on, but what I'm trying to say in a nutshell is I love being black. And black can be interchanged with African because that's where we are. And it's a habit because I've been taught to call myself black and I'm proud. How about I'm African and I'm proud?
Yeah.
Well, that didn't rhyme. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, James. But
they didn't have no flow. Yes, it does. But hey, he didn't know it.
he didn't know. But no, I'm African. I love being African. And I love the time that I'm in. And I love being on this planet with the people that I'm on this planet with and that I interact with. Because you only go through this life one time.
That's right.
So I'm trying to get all I can get.
Yep.
And right now, I feel good. I want everyone to feel good. And I think knowing your history lets you know what Dr. John Henry Clark says. It tells you where you are, where you've been, and what you need to do.
That's
so
right.
History is important in life. Right. Thank you, my brother. Let someone else talk.
All right, dear brother.
Love you, man.
You too, dear
I'm
brother.
Listening. Peace.
Yeah. Brother Lusk, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Bubba Oshie. Wow, how could I follow Brother Irv?
Yeah.
I tell you the truth, he was speaking. Yep. You were coming from out of Bubba Baruti's book, Identity.
Yeah.
Did I hear you say yeah?
Yeah. And, well, no, actually, this presentation was not out of Bubba Baruti's book. I just referenced it because I've used it so often. In other things that I've done, you know, but it's an outstanding book on identity.
Well,
go ahead.
But what I wanted to contribute for today's program is that I'm going to start with an African proverb, which says that he who learns teaches. Of course, that's the encouraging of others sharing knowledge with others.
Yes, right.
Well.
Exactly.
And so as a part of that, I think that we as Africans in America, American Africans, need to develop a level of consistency. And I speak for myself in that I know that that's something that I know I need to do. The old adage just says practice makes perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this repeated practice of a skill or a task will eventually lead to some sort of proficiency, right? Some sort of mastery of it. And it's the quality of that practice that makes the most important thing worthy of it. So, you know, you could also practice to lose.
Oh, yeah. That's why when I'm working with kids when I was a coach, you know, and he would say, does practice make perfect? They would say, no, coach. Perfect practice makes perfect because you can practice something. You can practice something and it's wrong. You know, your stance is wrong. The way you go through this hole is wrong. The way you receive the ball is wrong. And even though you practice it all the time, but it's wrong. So what makes perfect? Perfect practice makes perfect. And we try.
Right. Yep. And definitely, which leads to that quality of practice.
Yes.
And so the kinds and types of things that I think that we as melanated people across the diaspora should eventually come into is a level of consistency that you could find anywhere, whether you're in Venezuela, whether you're in Australia, whether you're in some parts of Europe, even in Africa, this level of consistency across the board. And so this is the then will lead me into my next little point that I'd like to share with you and as well as the listening audience. On next Saturday, we're going to do just that right here in Montgomery, Alabama. We're going to be observing our 13 years of the Ma'afa commemoration at the downtown Riverfront Park. And this is a kind of a precursor announcement to it. And so if those who are in the or near the Montgomery, Alabama area, lots going on.
Please.
Of course, with Brian Stevenson and the Sculpture Park, as well as the Legacy Museum and other places and points in between.
Mm-hmm.
There are things here in Montgomery, Alabama, that it's not just a civil rights thing, right?
Right,
it's not
right.
just a Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks thing. It's more. It is more.
I see
and
that.
So there are contributors throughout this city that we would love to share with those who will be in attendance on next Saturday. My cohort and I, brother Michael Jackson, having some family issues, would like to call in on Monday if it's okay.
Sure, please. Please
do.
We're
going to do a tip attack and just kind of talk with the audience as well as what it is that we're doing here. So that's my contribution for this today's phone call. That level of consistency, even I know I have to do that. And I'm going to start off by saying Amani na Nguvu. Amani na Nguvu, peace and power in Swahili.
I say.
Keep practicing.
All right, dear brother. Peace to you. Right on, Brother Lustin. Make sure I get that information. If you got something that you can email me so I can have that, to announce that all next week, please do.
Most definitely. Sure, okay. Sure.
Peace to you, my brother.
Thank you for picking my call, brother. Right, peace.
Have a good weekend. Brother Jay, how you doing, man?
Hey, what's going on, OC man? How are things, man?
Oh, good. Everything what about good? With you, dear brother? You okay?
I'm good, man. Did
right,
you
good.
Did you eat too many ribs yesterday, man?
Yeah, I'm still.
Did you leave those ribs
I'm
alone.
I'm still dripping in sauce.
Hey, listen, man. The good thing about those celebrations is at the end of the night, there's always going to be some form of entertainment from those that participate. Something's going to jump off, pop off, and it's going to be entertainment. As long as there's no violence at play.
That's right.
It's all good, it's man. All good. You know, cause whenever you get black people together, the main thing is to celebrate and have fun with one another.
Hey man, it sounds like your uncle was, you was kicking with your uncle again.
Oh, no. You know, it wasn't my uncle. It was a friend of mine's uncle.
Oh, okay. That's what it was.
To put on the performance.
Oh, okay.
Man. But it was, you know, it's for some reason, whenever there's alcohol involved in anything and there's, you know, a lot of consumption of it by individual, it could go left or right.
Yeah.
You know, it just depends on what is said. I guess, you know, that is in reference to using the N-word. You know what I mean? It's all about the application and the message in regards to the use and the definition of how one uses it.
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean? I mean, how did a white man keep the power that he keeps? He keeps it by defining whatever the argument is, whatever the message is. You know what I mean? I mean, we're at a state right now to where as we can't even get people to realize that you got one old cat running and another old cat who's basically a psychopath running, and for some reason the old cat that may be fibbling a little bit that's basically gonna do some decent things to keep you out of the mucky water, he's the one being disparaged totally. But the psychopath, the one that's gonna lead you down the toilet, he's the one that's being praised.
Right.
I mean, it's just madness,
right,
if you ask me. But it's about how people put forward the narrative. I mean, you know, as we grow and develop and witness what's going on, man, the media is more dangerous today, I believe, than it ever has been. Yeah. I mean, the media is wild, man.
Yeah,
it's at the point now, the way that they're putting forward messages, ideas, and opinion. I can't see to where it's good for the so-called country, so-called America. We know what they do over on the continent.
Well, you know, what it is about is the threat to European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is so deep. So these people are trying their best, whichever way they can, to maintain that, you know, to maintain that privilege that they have established for themselves. You even see in Kemet, in Kemet, the people who came and took that in the advent of Islam in the 7th century, 600s, you know, they wanted to say that all of that is theirs. All that was created there is theirs. Everything about it is theirs. And so I've seen on Facebook Arab-looking people claiming ancient Kemet and dynastic periods and kings and queens and so forth. They're claiming, just like they got mad about that series that was on Netflix with Cleopatra, her looking, you know, mixed. She looked mixed, and they took serious issue with that. You know, it's just like, check this out. Can you picture Anwar Sadat?
Yeah.
Okay. So Anwar Sadat was pissed because Lou Gossett Jr., rest his soul, played him in a docudrama. He was mad, you know, that
Anwar Sadat, if he was walking down the streets of Atlanta, he would be considered a Negro.
Exactly.
Not even a Baba Louie.
Yep.
He would be considered a Negro. He wouldn't be seen as damn white man. Or now do we put forward a color expression of what an Arab is? I can't tell the difference between an Arab and a Negro. I mean, I could, because they just have certain facial features and things of that nature. But the average cracker, he ain't gonna be able to tell the difference. I mean, it's just the absurdity sometimes just becomes overbearing, man, when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's like realizing that, you know, you're in a situation to where as you have to be observant to what's going on. I mean, the bottom line is, in this country, you know, white folks never want to give you the opportunity to be able to be observant of what's going on and what's surrounding you, and most of all, to not be able to understand what's going on and what's surrounding you and compress it into something beneficial to you. They want to dictate how you see, feel, think, and everything.
Of course,
so
they want to control everything.
So whereby we in a situation to is, that's what we do.
Mm-hmm. They want to control everything.
Is there anything in this country? Let's be honest. Is there anything in this country that we control?
No. No.
Okay.
But Jay, what's most important is we don't control our minds. That's what's most important. And the European, he has been all about mind control. Because just as Carter G. Woodson said, when you control a man's thinking, you don't have to worry about his action. If you render him an outcast, he'll be an outcast. If you tell him to go yonder, he'll go yonder. You know?
Well, all I can say is this, though. If you don't control anything at all, you don't have power to dictate anything. And unfortunately, that's the position that we in right now. We don't control anything to the point to where as we dictate how the narrative moves forward. How, you know, it's like I say it all the time. I mean, people don't want to hear it, but black people are basically on remote control in this country. That's all. You're on remote control. And I'll leave you with this. Think about this. The government is the biggest employee of black people in this country.
That's right.
And there's talk that they're going to lay off 50,000.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So out of that 50,000, you know it's going to probably be 35,000 of us.
Right.
Right? The question becomes this, and it, we need to be honest about it. When those 35,000 are taken away and replaced by white folks, who's going to hire the 35,000 that were displaced?
We can't. We have nothing to hire them for.
Okay.
We don't hire. So, we don't hire.
So what position, so if that's the case, what position do that place us in?
Very precarious, doesn't it?
I mean,
very tenuous position, doesn't it?
And you know, nobody addresses that. Nobody deals with that. Nobody articulates the fact that you in that type of position. But then again, they want to romanticize about black people this, black people that. The reality is, and I'm sorry to say it, and I hate to say it, black people ain't got no power, no position in this country to, be honest, survive.
No, we don't dictate anything. We're at the whims. We're at the whim of how this society is. Because why? We've tried, but they've dogged us up. So we just feel that we could just go along to get along.
Hey, you know? the only reason me and you may survive in this equation and in this situation is because we got a little bit of money. That's the only
Baba
reason.
Ozen,
yeah. Other than that, we're not surviving. We're not really surviving this on a collective. Maybe some individuals will be all right, but you got to have your business in order. And then that could be a little shaky too,
yeah,
depending on how they want to make moves on you.
Exactly.
But the deal is you in a situation to where as you basically waiting to die, but in the process, if you're committed and you understand, you got to understand that you got to educate the babies. That's what the reality is. You gotta educate the babies. If you educating the babies and giving them an idea and an agenda on how to move forward and survive, then you've done your job. That's where I'm at. I mean, the most important thing that I tell any kid that I work with is gotta have a worldview, bro. You got to learn a couple of basics of different languages. You got to get a skill that if you can do it here, good. And if you can't do it here, hopefully you can do it someplace else in the world. And when you're at that position, you got power and strength. Because the reality is, if you shut me down here and I got a skill and I could go someplace else,
right,
and I could aptly make myself to that community because I understand the basics of community, in that community, believe me, you're going to be embraced.
All right.
Because I got a young boy now, Oshi, that goes all around the world welding.
Right. You talk about that, brother. That's remarkable.
Yeah, man, easy.
Yeah.
And the thing is, all he had to do was listen to what I was saying, and like he tell me all the time, thank you.
Right on. Well, listen, gentlemen, get some more for
I gave him the basis to do his thing.
All right, Jay. Appreciate you, bro.
All right,
oh. Peace.
Put me on hold.
All right. Brother Irv.
Baba Oshi, really quickly, I agree with Jay on a lot of what he said, but let's be perfectly clear. We do have power. We have the power over how we think and what we believe.
That's the power we have. Of course, we need to uninstall this operating system that we're in, and that's right. What we're doing on this show. We're uninstalling that operating system because we think different about ourselves. We cannot sit here and think that we're going to see revolution or see liberation other than in our mind. We are planting seeds for the future, the same as Urugu has done. Each one of us becomes a Johnny Appleseed. We're planting seeds. Wherever we open our mouths, we're talking about revolution, self-determination, and liberation.
Right.
And so we do have – to say we don't have power, it didn't bother me, but I don't agree with that part. We may not have a store, but when you go into the store, you're not in there dancing and just as happy to buy it. I'm mad that I got to go to this store. I want to go to the black supermarket,
right,
wherever it's at. You know, so, but right. No, it's not that you have to do it. It's how you think about what you do. People are going to eat. People are going to do what they have to do to live. But you got, it's what you think when you're doing it. You can do whatever you want, be in a crowd of people and not even be there. Because I was at a function last night with a whole lot of Caucasians. And I wasn't sitting there trying to be them or looking up to them or they so great. They got this big, beautiful home and they go. No, they are still the same Urugu that's in this system that's perpetuating it.
Yeah.
But we have to live here before you can live anywhere else. But plant the seed. Any American African got close to me, they got the business from me. Mm-hmm. What you talking about, brother? Where you from? What's your mindset? Mm-hmm. What you think about yourself? You know, I don't give a damn. I'm not talking about Donald Trump and the other guy, I could give a damn about those two. I care about the people that come in contact with me, and I want to know if they are. Do they think like me? Can we do something together to perpetuate our people into this sovereignty, or are we sitting here going along to get along? Because that's not what black people are doing. People, we are fighting, but you don't have to put the fight on the radio because we don't want to. But we're fighting, Baba Oshi. But no, we do have power. They never say we're powerless because it's all in us, everything we need. I just wanted to say that.
Right on, brother. I say. Yeah, we do. Power. That's why I love Dr. Wade Noble's definition of power. Power is not money, family. Power is not money. Power is not voting. You know. Power is not information. I know that there's one. I think that was Carl Nelson's show, man. You know, power, information. You know, power is not information. Because if the information that you receive is flawed and inaccurate, how can you derive real power from that? You know, power is not voting. Many people vote and they get all mad because they voted and no change or the fact that they voted and their candidate didn't win, which may happen in November. And believe me, Donald Trump's wins, then Project 2025 is going to be put into effect. And that's just like what Brother Jay said, that part of that project is many government workers will lose their jobs. And of course, we last hired, first fired, as usual, you know. And, of course, there'll be some white people, conservative people, minded people who are in line with that. They're going to get the jobs, whatever. You know, some may argue that I hope it happens. I ain't lying to you, family. I was like, man, maybe if Ronald Reagan does become president, that'll lead us to push ourselves to being liberated and going, you know. No, that didn't, did it? No. It didn't happen even when Trump was elected the first time, did it? No. Because we so tied up in this bullshit. Yeah. So to me, whichever way we want to go, if it's towards independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty, let's go, family. Let's go. There's a way. Let's go. If you want to be a Pan-Africanist, cultural naturalist, yeah, let's go. Sometimes you got to be pushed in a certain direction because you You're just like that mule. You don't want to go. You got to be kicked. You know? And so, you know, whether it happens or not, we got to go. We have to go. So it remains to be seen, family. We'll see. We'll see. I appreciate all those who called in and those who listen. Yeah, hope you have a good weekend. Hope it's safe. This is still part of the holiday weekend. So let's hope and make it safe. You know. Let's hope the major cities where we are predominant are pretty safe. You know. Let's hope that we begin to realize what we must do. Now, I'm pushing this idea that we ain't black, we African. I've been doing that. Ain't nothing new. I'm pushing the idea that we have to go home to Africa. It cannot be done here. This is the Caucasian. He took this. And he's shown to hell and given it back. And he gave the indigenous people a form of reparations. You know? And some of them utilized it to help their cultural people. Some of them just maintained it for themselves. I know for us as Africans, it didn't help us. And we are, there's a lot of people who are part of the indigenous people that are part of us. But they said, if you ain't full-blooded Cherokee, you don't get none of this. Oh, man, I tell you. That's why I don't give a damn about it. I mean, I care about others. I do. But what I care about is us. And we have to do for ourselves. So we end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Be safe. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahardier. Bibi Fahardier means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful weekend, family. Peace.